Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome to the IL Women Podcast. We're here for our second episode of the season. Welcome to March. A lot has happened. A lot of upsets, a very clear group of teams at the top of the polls. And we're ready for a lot more action. The March to May starts right now. We've got Alyssa Cometti, Emily Considine here. Guys, how are you doing?
Great. Good weekend of lacrosse.
Doing good. Happy March.
Ready to rock. Like I said, it is, it feels like we have gone from not knowing anything. We still don't know anything, I would say. But at least it feels like we are kind of en route to May now with a lot of stuff happening. You know, RPI wins are kind of taking shape. So we're looking ahead to May already, even though it's just the beginning of March. The men's and women's NCAA championship weekend, that's going to be at Gillette Stadium. It's going to be held jointly for the first time since 2017, from May 23rd to May 26th. Nowhere in the lacrosse world to be than Foxborough, Massachusetts. Eight of the best and most impactful games of the season. The action starts Friday with the women's D1 semifinals. Saturday will be the men's D1 semis, and then the championship action starts on Sunday with men's D2 and men's D3 and women's D1. It's going to end Monday afternoon with the men's D1 final. We're here talking about women's lacrosse, and I'm really excited. I think we know some of the teams that are going to be there, but don't count the chickens before they hatch. This year, Inside Lacrosse is proud to partner with the NCAA to offer you, the loyal listeners, $5 off single-day tickets, both men's and women's, by using the code ILPOD at checkout. Head to ncaa.com/laxtickets and enter ILPOD at checkout to purchase your tickets. You know you're going to go to championship weekend, so you might as well get $5 off. Help us show the NCAA how the awesome listeners, how the women's lacrosse fans are purchasing tickets and want to be at this event. Once again, that's ncaa.com/laxtickets and ILPOD at checkout for $5 off your tickets. Now, I keep mentioning, there's this group of teams at the top, and I don't think there's any surprises there, right? Boston College seems clearly the best team in the country. Or I don't know, clearly. North Carolina, back from the injuries and all the adversity they faced last year, and they are just kind of on a warpath right now, it seems. Northwestern, we just most recently saw them have a great win in the Dome, and their first one in a long time, which was surprising to me. And they're right up there. And then we get to this point of like Yale, we have as the number four team in the Kane media poll. And I'm just curious where, what is this dividing line between these teams that we think are championship contenders and this big, ambiguous middle tier of teams that it feels like on any given day, they can beat anybody, they can beat each other, they can lose to anybody as well, maybe. Where do we put Yale in there? So, Alyssa, we saw them kind of take it to Michigan early in the season. They haven't quite been tested in their recent games as much. So we don't really quite have that, like, them against elite competition to go off of. But what have you seen them, in the teams that they faced? Like, where are they?
Yeah, I think that I wouldn't group them, like you said. The top three to me are the clear front runners. Yale, I think, is leading the pack of that next group currently. What makes them so strong is obviously they've got players all around on both ends of the field. They're super balanced, but they gave Michigan so much trouble, or Michigan's offense so much trouble. They have a really tough zone to crack. And so I think that really helped them pull off that win, which was pretty critical for them. I don't think they would even be close to top four had they lost to Michigan right now, because their strength of schedule has not picked up since, which, I think being in the Ivy League, they'll play some quality competition, but they've got games like against Stanford, which would be a huge one for them to win. I think Stanford's right on that next cusp of being like, okay, how good is this team? And then they'll play Syracuse, also a huge one. And then outside that is outside of the Ivy competition. So we would have to wait for a long time had they dropped to Michigan to see just how powerful they are. But, I think they're leading the pack of that second group pretty much.
Yeah, and Michigan is probably right there as well. They lost to Yale 12-6 early in the year. This past weekend beat Penn 15-8, which I think people could be a little surprised about the disparity in that scoreline, if not the result. So, but this weekend was interesting. You know, when we talk about the middle tier that can beat anybody, it was fully on display, right? Let's see. We've got, you know, the past few weeks, we've got Harvard beating Navy, Navy beating Virginia, James Madison beating Florida, and James Madison is a team that lost a game, you know, early in the year. You've got Maryland and Syracuse are these teams that are really young, and, you know, Syracuse beat Maryland, but then Syracuse has gone on to lose a few games since then. So really anything can happen. But let's talk about Harvard, because I think Harvard is one of those like really interesting teams that maybe wasn't on people's radar, and then they go and, you know, beat Navy. What can we tell us, Emily, what can you tell us about the Crimson?
Yeah, I think they're a program that have kind of been building for this year for a couple of years. They have some really great players that have found their chemistry and found their groove, and they're meshing well with a really great freshman class. They also have just a top tier coaching staff that I think they're really absorbing a lot of knowledge and information from, that's having them compete really well. You know, their loss to Drexel early on was a little funky. That's something that you wouldn't necessarily see from a team that beat Navy. But I think they really put a stamp on it, them being a, you know, a team that can make waves this year with the overtime win with against UConn.
Yeah, and UConn is one of those teams that, again, in the same category, really, of, you know, they probably turned some heads with some of their results, and they played a really close game against James Madison early in the year. They had this close loss to Harvard, but then they came back and beat UMass. So again, like, it really feels like this group of teams, you just don't know what's going to happen week in and week out. But I think there's no two who have been as interesting, I guess, as Clemson and Stanford, two teams that have really shot up the polls this season. In their, you know, Clemson is still a new program, you know, still kind of in its infancy as a program. And Stanford is, you know, entering the ACC, which, you know, certainly they've played difficult teams and made these trips in the past that have, you know, played against the toughest competition. But now those games mean something for their league play. And they seem to be handling it pretty well right now. Now, Clemson is a team that, you know, I wouldn't say you should be 100% surprised. Maybe you're surprised about how quickly this happened, them being a top 10 team, beating a team like Syracuse last week. But you shouldn't be surprised that this is the trajectory that they're on, you know, given that number one recruiting class that they had. We did a cover story on them. You know, obviously Alexis Spallina is coming, but that has really nothing to do with the players that are on the roster right now, who are just tremendous athletes who you knew they were going to, you know, get some wins and be good. Alyssa, when you look at them, why has it happened this quickly?
I think they've done a great job also bringing in top recruiting classes. You know, you've got players like Natalie Shurtleff, Kayla MacLeod, but they've done really well in the portal as well. And that's been over several years. You see some of their top players doing well, but I think we wrote about them. They've got Lindsay Marshall coming from, Emily is going to remember this better than me, Towson, I want to say.
Yep.
And she, you know, she's been a great player for them. Katie Castiello, who used to help us out with IL Women's social media, she's crushing it. She's transferred from Cornell. And so, you know, it's just a combination of players that have veteran experience and have a lot of years under their belt playing. And then pair that with the athleticism and talent of and youth that they have coming in from, you know, recruiting classes, primarily the Natalie Shurtleff class, the class of 2023, right? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, those sophomores, Natalie Shurtleff, Reagan Byrne, Blair Byrne, Jasmine, yep, Stanton, all of them, you know, they weren't the number one class, but they were one of the top ranked classes in, yes, that group. And it was just a really special class the way it came together. But what you're describing is like kind of an insane amount of depth for a program as new as they are. When you have like these great sophomores who come from this great recruiting class, plus, you know, seniors, juniors, and some other ones who like maybe aren't the best player to come from, but like, you know, good quality players from a lot of different programs who have experiences in a lot of different areas, you know, that's really a recipe for success. And you got to look at Clemson as just like one of those success stories of when you invest in a program, you know, what it means. You know, they have this gorgeous state-of-the-art women's lacrosse only facility going up that's, you know, one of the few in the sport. And you see that, and, you know, you're a young player in high school. I mean, that means a lot, you know, that a program is willing to put this much in, particularly when you go against some of your peers and like, oh, we're sharing a locker room with this team or that team. You know, really Clemson, you know, is kind of taking the lacrosse world by storm a little bit. I didn't think it was going to happen this quickly. I thought next year was kind of their breakthrough year, not this year. But, you know, with the resources that they're throwing into things, you know, it's pretty remarkable. And what can you guys make of the Syracuse win? You know, because Syracuse is a team that, like, obviously it's historic. I think people knew there'd be some growing pains because of the number of young players that Syracuse is playing this year. But, you know, a one-goal win against them and then a one-goal win against Notre Dame, a team that's kind of in the same boat as Syracuse in terms of, you know, working in new players. Just what did you see in those games that made you feel good about them? Emily, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think Clemson has just been super consistent this year. And I think the Notre Dame win gave them the confidence that they needed paired with that consistency, which really propelled them in the win over Syracuse is what my take on that is.
I would say when I was watching the game, the body language of Clemson versus Syracuse looked completely different. You know, it just, I think going off of what Emily said is that, you know, that Notre Dame win gave them the confidence that they can, you know, pull off upsets. You know, they played a bunch of close games and last season, but they came up short. And I know they came up short against Notre Dame in overtime last year. And so just finishing the deal is that next step to success. And I think just having that faith and pulling it off and then saying, okay, we're going to go and do it again. You know, I think that it was just their confidence. They were confident that they were, you know, Syracuse had an answer. It was a low scoring game. So every possession felt like it mattered, especially down the stretch. And so every momentum swing that Syracuse got, they had an answer. I mean, they let in an own goal. Or like it wasn't technically an own goal, but a really like just awkward goal that was off of a pass to bring it within one, give Syracuse life. And, you know, a team that isn't totally bought in, totally like we've got this, could let that just completely derail the game plan and the confidence. And they went out and won the next draw and, you know, just stayed calm and poised and not the easiest place to play. On the Syracuse side, to me, it showed kind of like they just had a really tough stretch of they played three top 10 teams, if we're going with this week's rankings, in a matter of a week. And I think that kind of showed for Syracuse. It looked like they were I don't know if it was tired legs, but it just, you know, looked a little bit like it was their third game in a week, especially against the top talent. So, you know, I think you look at that game, if you're Syracuse, being like, we wish we had that one back. And if you're Clemson, you're like, we just pulled off an awesome upset. And that's just going to continue this awesome momentum that we've created.
Yeah. And if you look at their schedule, you know, it's obviously ACC. So it's top play, but you know, the way that they balance the schedule, this actually shapes up pretty well for them to have not that many losses, you know, obviously knock on wood, you can't count anything as a win. But man, they could go in to the end of the year with one, two, maybe three losses. Like, you know, that's really how it's kind of shaping up for them. And April 10th against Stanford is going to be one to watch. Emily?
I just wanted to mention, you know, I think this is something I was just thinking about. As a new program, there's no alumni base. And there's like this lack, there's not the pressure that a team like Syracuse has to play for something that's bigger than them. You know, there's no pressure of letting this huge fan base down. They're kind of just creating it. You know, they're creating this foundation for themselves. And I think that not really having some sort of pre-existing expectation is putting them in a really great spot to play a little bit more free and really create their own history in the making, rather than someone like Syracuse or Notre Dame that's like, well, the team last year got to here and the alumni want this so badly for us, we have to do it for them too. There's really none of that, so they can really center their program just around themselves right now.
And everything, every accomplishment they do becomes such a huge... huge positive that it's right. Not compared to like, oh, you beat Notre Dame, but remember last year we beat them by 4 goals.
Right. Everything can be celebrated.
It can be celebrated on its own as opposed to compared to something else. And Stanford, again, is, you know, the other team that I think if you had to put two, surprise probably isn't the right word. I think Stanford maybe we should have seen come in a little bit more. But 6-0, you know, they've kind of started their ACC journey in a pretty good spot, beat Virginia, beat Villanova, which is actually, you know, Villanova's record, don't let that deceive you. Villanova has some 1-goal losses, and that's a program that's really difficult. And they have Syracuse coming up, and they have Cornell coming up. They have a little bit more of a difficult path toward the end of the year than Clemson does. But again, I said maybe we should have seen this coming in the sense that you have someone like Jordan Case, you have Aaliyah Poliski, Ava Arseri. There's some really good players here. You know, they had injuries last year that they had to deal with. So that's something that, you know, probably accounts for the way that they started this year. Emily, you're working on a story about the program. So what can you tell us about them?
Yeah, I think them too is just, this is a year that they've kind of been working towards, similar to Harvard. So I wouldn't say this really surprises me. But more so, we can see some really great things from them this year. Danielle has been working really hard to get top recruits, and Aaliyah Poliski has worked out so phenomenally for them. And her story is super cool, of her joining the program early as an early enroller, and kind of just practicing with them and going to school and really developing. And I think that's been, someone like her has really made an impact on, you know, the success that they've had last year and how that they're kind of carrying that into this year. Obviously, it's a little bit of a tougher road to postseason than they're used to joining the ACC this year. But they seem to be super excited about it, ready to take it in stride. And, you know, the way that games have been going so far, I think that it's not going to be, you know, this great catastrophe that many probably thought in the beginning, that this was going to be a really hard adjustment for them. I think they're going to handle it well. And these games are going to be super competitive and really exciting.
And they should be pretty good for a few years to come. You know, most of the players we've mentioned here are sophomores. You know, there's a few freshmen in the mix there that are, you know, putting up points for them. So it's not a, like, they've been building to this year, but they've been building to kind of almost this this set of years, so right. to speak, because it's not like it's, you know, sometimes you get that class where it's like, all right, this group came together, they started playing as freshmen, and then by their senior year, they're the best team in the conference or whatever. You know, this is a little bit more, these guys have hit stride pretty early in their careers. So good on them for, you know, maybe coming a little ahead of schedule, maybe not, but we'll see what the rest of the season has for them. But let's go back to Syracuse a little bit, because, you know, we talked a little bit when we met 3 weeks ago about, it's a young team. Now, the Northwestern game, Alyssa, you and I kind of had this discussion after the game. As much as you don't like the result, like, I think you like the way that you played. You know, you played again. It was a 4-goal loss, which, you know, on its face maybe doesn't sound great. But I think your freshmen played key roles and you saw like a sign of like positive things to come. There were stretches where, you know, the defense played extremely well. There were stretches when your goalie particularly, you know, kind of bailed you out of some things. And then you saw moments where Emma Ward was Emma Ward and, you know, was one of the best attackers in the nation. So, like, I don't think you come out of that game, you know, feeling really down if you're an Orange fan. And then obviously the 9-8 Clemson loss, which I think, like you said, you can kind of chalk it up to a little bit of a, like, it's tough to keep that level of focus and intensity for, you know, a week and a half of those kind of opponents. But, you know, you're looking at 3-3, and you can kind of say a lot of these same things about the men's program too right now, in terms of, like, maybe it's not as bad as it seems being 3-3 right now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's funny. I mean, you know, if they drop this next game, I think that's going to be a crushing for them. Like, I can only imagine. It's never like as dire as it seems, because we've had years where we're like, oh, is Boston College not that good? And then all of a sudden we're saying this in early March, and then all of a sudden they're winning the ACC tournament and, you know, going to the Final Four for the billionth time. And, you know, it's different amount of time to develop and to become the team that they're going to be at the end of the season. And I think when you have a lot of players that are new or haven't played together, you know, obviously outside of practice, it sometimes takes longer. And, you know, I think, you know, you look at a 12-8 loss to Northwestern. In reality, it was a 10-8 loss because they scored two open net goals at the end of the game after pulling their goalie to just hope to get the ball back. So if you watch the first quarter of that game, it was not pretty. I don't know what the score was off the top of my head. I want to say they were down 4-5, had really no quality offensive possession, and managed to turn it around in the middle two quarters to make it a game and make it something that they were actually in the game. And I think they did a great job against Madison Taylor. You know, she had, I want to say, 3 goals maybe at the end of the day, including, I know she was one of scoring on at least one of the open net goals, but like to hold her to 3 goals, including an end of game goal, like that is a win in itself. And so you can walk away from that being like, okay, that worked. Guyette played great in cage against the other shooters. So just taking those small wins, I think, you know, if I'm Syracuse, I'm you're such a young team. I'm looking at the silver lining of these losses, and, you know, that nothing in February defines you. It's May and April, and that really the road of getting there. And right now it's really just digging in and figuring out the team you're going to become.
Maryland lost to Syracuse, you know, in the Maryland season debut. That was in February 15th, which seems like an eternity ago. I was at that game, and it was bitter cold and just miserable. Not that it wasn't this weekend too, but they've since won 3 games, you know, a close win against Georgetown, which again might be a little bit like, oh, they maybe should have handled that a little bit better. But obviously that, you know, had its own kind of layer of emotion to it as well. Beating St. Joseph's and then a 14-10 win against Denver. They've got James Madison up next. And Emily, when you look at, you know, the number of new players that are on this team, you know, obviously Corey Edmondson is the known, and it's kind of her job to, you know, take the next step to be, you know, the star on that team. But then, you know, Maisie Clevenger is only a sophomore. Kayla Gilmore is a freshman. Shelby Sullivan is a freshman. You know, they're working. Devin Livingston is a freshman. You know, they're working in a new goalie. That's just a lot to deal with when you're a program, you know, like Maryland, like Syracuse, where there's a lot of expectations every time you go onto the field. So I guess just having known some of these young players, Emily, like, how do you see them progressing over, you know, the course of the season?
Yeah, I mean, there is the expectation that they're going to develop and they're going to create a team that, you know, doesn't have these little hiccup losses to teams that they so-called shouldn't be losing to. They definitely have a tough stretch coming up with JMU, Penn State, Michigan, and Northwestern all in a row. I think what happens in the JMU game could potentially set the tone for, you know, the following 3. Penn State, you know, has had some good wins over the last 2 seasons, so you never know what can happen with them. And obviously Michigan and Northwestern have very sound teams. So it's going to be interesting. like you said, like players like Kayla Gilmore, they're still getting their feet wet. They're still trying to figure themselves out as college players. So it's going to take time for them to get comfortable and develop that chemistry. And Corey Edmondson's a phenomenal player, but she can't do it by herself. So they definitely need a few more players on that team to step up and be a little bit more of a go-to person to help, you know, get them over the hump that they have right now.
Well, I think Kathy Reese has done this before. So, you know, I think that, you know, it's, you know, they're 3-1. One loss to, again, a great program, you know, even though if they're also young. So certainly not cause for concern, but just kind of cause for monitoring how they're going to kind of progress as the year goes along. And, you know, when you kind of rattled off all those teams, Emily, it really got me thinking about just these conferences and, you know, Penn State, Michigan, Northwestern, and then Oregon after that as a Big Ten opponent for Maryland. And the Big Ten and the ACC are, you know, for they dominate the conversation in the sport of lacrosse, men's and women's. Obviously, there are other teams that are championship contenders and whatever. But just from the sheer size of both of these conferences, now that they keep adding teams seemingly all the time, and the strength of these conferences, you know, it really is a grind. So I guess just I want to hear Emily, I want to hear your take on just like when you're comparing the conferences, what do you see? Like what defines the ACC? What defines the Big Ten? And, you know, as these teams go through a season with these teams, I guess just like kind of explain to me, like, you know, what does it take to get through the Big Ten? What does it take to get through ACC play?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think some of the difference between, you know, a Big Ten ACC player and then, you know, some of the other conferences is just sheer athletic ability. Some of these players you could put on a soccer field and they could potentially dominate just as much as they do on a lacrosse field. Where some of the other conferences, you would define them as lacrosse players. Like they're very good lacrosse players. Here we have very good athletes that are very good lacrosse players. So I think that's potentially the, you know, the major difference. And then with that comes, you know, the speed of the game is faster, the physicality is different. Just so many different components that you can play into how successful these two conferences particularly are. But then there comes, you know, tradition. Like these programs, they've moved around conferences. I mean, how many different conferences has Maryland been in? Three, roughly. Two, maybe, in recent years. But there is a tradition of success and winning, and they're bringing in players that not only want to play and compete, but they want to win, and they'll do whatever it takes to win.
The thing that strikes me with both of these conferences, especially how big they are, because, you know, they keep adding these teams and, you know, like, and it's the same thing, like the Patriot League has had this, you know, as well, where like the conference is very large and you get into conference play so early and you're seemingly in it the entire course of the season. So it's just it's the constantness of it.
Yeah. The weight of each game is a little bit more intense earlier on in the season than it used to be.
Yeah, and then, you know, just that's an elite level of focus from these athletes in these conferences that when you talk about like being a great athlete, being a great lacrosse player, and then you add in this other component of like you need to be so hyper focused on your craft and each week, you know, that's really demanding of all of these players. Now, Alyssa, refresh my memory. When you were at Syracuse, were you both Big East and ACC, or did you kind of bridge the gap of both of them?
Yeah, so we 3 years while I was there, we were Big East, and then the last year was our first year in the ACC. Mm-hmm. Maryland's last year in the ACC as well.
Yeah, that's right. We had a cover at one of those points that said the best conference ever, because there was that 1 year where before Maryland had exited for the Big Ten, they were still in the ACC, and then Syracuse came into the ACC. So it was basically all the superpowers, like, you know, united in one conference. But I guess just like when you know, we're going into conference play for most teams now. No matter who the team is, you know, whether it's the last place team in the conference or the first place team in the conference, like, I guess just like the fact that you play them every year, you probably know, you probably hate, you probably love some of the people on the opposing sidelines. Like, just how much does the intensity shift in those games?
I mean, it definitely kicks it up. I don't know. It's hard to say because I was just a nut job when I played, like, every – so it's hard to – like, I don't know. Like, beyond competitive, that, like, every game was, like, my life was on the line, which is
not – it's a real, real healthy attitude, yeah.
And I was just going to say, like, not the healthiest take of things, but, like, I'm still here. But I think – yeah, I mean, obviously it means more because it sets you up for down the line and you want to have the best seed going into the tournament, into your conference tournament, and then into NCAA play. But, you know, I think it's not the end of the world if you drop it either, because I know when I was playing, it was like you lose a game that you want back that's in conference. You're like, well, we're going to see them again and, like, we are going to, you know what. Just remember, I in a former life I was like a uber competitive psychopath, but like so it's also refreshing and like comforting in that too, and that's why I think, you know, you see these crazy outcomes when it comes to like the ACC tournament. You're just like, whoa, like where did that come from? I think I mean, like Boston College's like total like rampage that they went on last year. And then North Carolina a couple of years ago, when I think they were whatever whoever they played to get to the championship, they just like went off and everyone was like, oh my gosh, like where did this come from? When it was like a close game in the regular season. So I think it kind of makes it fun at the same time, just because you're like, it'll hype you up for the tournament too.
Let's look a little bit at the other conferences. Which conference races are you guys most, you know, now that you've seen a little bit of data from the early start of the season, give me a conference race that you're most following in terms of like a team that, you know, you're questioning who is the favorite and who's not. Okay, Emily, I think I know where you're going to go with it.
Don't take mine, Emily.
I mean, I want to say Big Ten, but I think it's hard, you know, Northwestern is really dominating them right now, but that second layer, I just don't know. I could see Penn State and Ohio State maybe doing something out of the ordinary also. So I'm not sure. I guess I would have to go to that one, but also the Ivy League is pretty interesting to me.
The Ivy League, you know, right now Yale is kind of the, like we just mentioned, you know, they might be a national championship type contender, but man, that might be the most exciting conference race out there when you consider Yale, Princeton's what Harvard's solid. Doing. Princeton yeah. is really good. And then, you know, Penn maybe is coming off of a bad loss here, or not a bad loss. They lost to Michigan, but, you know, a decisive loss. But certainly they're going to be in the mix there. I mean, if you come consider a top four of like, you know, in the actual conference tournament, that's going to be a really high level group of teams. But Emily, I thought you were going to go with the Patriot League.
That's what I was going to.
No, I mean, Loyola is actually not having the year that I thought they would initially, but I think maybe they're still working some few kinks out. They did lose, you know, a very impactful senior class. But I don't know. Also, Holy Cross is really giving me something here. So I'm excited to see how they do in the Patriot League.
The other one that my first one that I was going to say is the Big East, because I think there's like a really strong potential that they'll be a first time Big East champion. And we mentioned Villanova, but UConn too. I think those are the, unless Denver just like totally turns things around, not to say that they're like out of it at all, but they're the ones that we've been used to hearing coming out of the Big East. And like now it doesn't like seem as clear cut as it has in the past several years. Which is exciting. I mean, obviously, any time that there's a first-time champion, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and Marquette has had some strong seasons. And
yeah, Marquette too.
You know, they've got Northwestern coming up, so obviously that'll be a big, you know, see where they're at kind of game. But, you know, they just beat Niagara 16-11, and that's a team that's won conference championship, beat Louisville. You know, they've beat Cincinnati. So, like, there's some stuff there. And Georgetown as well. you know, close loss against Maryland, a one goal loss against Towson. The game against Johns Hopkins got away from them, but, you know, they bounced back and beat Lehigh. So, like, what do you consider, like, in a tournament, to your earlier point where you're going to see a team and then see them again and be able to adjust and react to what happened the first time? Certainly a lot there in terms of, you know, what can happen over the course of a few months. Big 12 is going to be interesting just because of the, you know, Florida seems like a pretty clear team in that league, but it's just a lot of intrigue being the Big 12 brand in college lacrosse. And then, yeah, I mean, there's a lot. America East is going to be really interesting too. AAC with JMU and South Florida, maybe, like, you know, getting to the tournament and being able to potentially play a spoiler role in that tournament as well. All right. We're going to end with just a few, I don't know if bold predictions is the right word, but let's start talking about, we're putting the cart before the horse in a big way here, but we have a month of the season. Who is the front runner for National Player of the Year?
You want me to go first?
Rachel Clark. It's Elle or Madison Taylor. I mean, it's too obvious.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. Is it just Madison the two that we?
Yeah. If Madison Taylor's not the obvious answer, Rachel Clark is a really good one.
I guess a better way to phrase it: has there been anyone that you've seen that might come close to those two?
If North Carolina wins and is like wins the national championship and is like holding those two players to like their lowest scoring, whatever. Like, I don't know if their defense can figure them out and Brooklyn Walker Welch is a finalist and a huge part of that, then I would say that she deserves Rachel DiCecco treatment.
Well, women's lacrosse is not afraid to put a goalie or a defender as the player of the year, like men's lacrosse is, apparently.
Yeah. You're saying there's a chance.
So it's possible. And like you said, like there's potentially no team that's been as impressive as North Carolina has. You know, 5-goal win over Florida, 8-goal win over Syracuse. And then, you know, the teams that they should beat, they're beating them, you know, very, very handily. You know, I said they're on a warpath, and it just definitely feels like our last year basically got taken away from us because of so many injuries. So we're going to just like win by so much that we are going to count it as double. Like it's so, you know, very curious to see as it comes down to some more intriguing play for them. Who is the breakout player of the year so far? We mentioned one of them, Aaliyah Peliski from Stanford.
Yeah.
I mean, the Syracuse goalie has had a very impressive start to the season.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta say, like, oh, Mackin, Ashley Mackin.
Ashley Mackin.
So crushing
Ashley
you.
Ashley Mackin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's, like, you know, I don't know if it's a breakout because we've talked about her forever, but, like, I feel like you gotta give Chloe Humphrey her flowers for, like, being this highly touted recruit and then showing up and, like, being North Carolina's leading goal scorer. She'd be the leading point scorer if her sister weren't there. But, like, you know, the two of them play so well together. It's awesome. So I think she's really, I mean, her first season is automatic or has already been crushing it. So, yeah, I think she's in that conversation as well.
Yeah, for sure. So this coming weekend, you know, we were joking about how on the first one that, you know, women's lacrosse had it figured out in terms of having the games, you know, spread out across different times of day. Unfortunately, last week, all of the big games were between like 11 a.m. and 1 and all ending and starting at the same time. So didn't quite get 4 weeks in a row of a premier schedule, but did what we could. We've got Syracuse Stanford. That's going to be Friday happy hour lacrosse on the ACC network. So that'll be something that, you know, get off of work, leave work a little bit early if you need to, and you can go out and watch and ask the bar to put that on TV. 11 a.m., you know, we've got some Notre Dame versus Boston College, which, you know, I don't think anyone's picking against BC, but it is an ACC game. Duke Clemson, which is a game I'm very curious about because, you know, I think Duke has had a, you know, they've had a good season so far.
They could be a sleeper.
That they could definitely be a sleeper. A 12-11 loss to Johns Hopkins, a team that basically has only played in one goal games. you know, 19-10 a loss to Boston College, but you really can't blame anyone for losing to Boston College by that much. And again, the hits keep coming this weekend with Florida versus Loyola, Princeton versus Harvard, James Madison versus Maryland. Again, that's a game that I think a lot of people really should circle in terms of just kind of where are these teams at. And then North Carolina, Virginia is, you know, later in the afternoon, 2:30 p.m. So you're going to need multiple screens because a lot of those games are basically happening at the same time. But it should be a great weekend. So I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, guys, for joining the IL Women podcast. And yeah, the March to May moves on. And we will see you in 3 weeks. At least Emily and I will. And thanks for listening.